is Stephanie Jones interviewing Effie Mae Burns at her house in Piedmont, Alabama on March 23, 1996.
This journal covered my life from birth through high school graduation. Is lovingly dedicated to my great niece, Stephanie Skye Jones, at whose request I have undertaken this account of the years past. I, Effie Mae Norton Bowie Burns, was born December 30th, 1918, in a primitive country home located in Pleasant Gap, Cherokee County, Alabama. The attending physician was Dr. Jefferson Forrest Emerson of the Spring Garden, Cherokee County, Alabama area. Dr. Emerson attended the rural schools of Cherokee County, later enrolling in the U.S. Grant University, Chattanooga, Tennessee, and graduating in 1894. Although prenatal care was unheard of, and my mother only saw the doctor when she went into labor, everything proceeded well, and I came into this world hardly weighing 5 pounds. I remember Mother telling me about that time, and that Dr. Emerson jokingly told her to hurry up, as he only had one chew of tobacco left. Present the night of my birth was also my great-grandmother, Elizabeth Jane Lockridge Hilbert. Great-grandmother was a very courageous lady, for she had come into this home when both my parents were very ill with influenza, which is a highly contagious disease. She had a determination to nurse her eldest grandchild and her spouse back to health, and to assist with the birth of her first great grandchild. She never became ill. In 1918, influenza had swept our nation, and over 500,000 people died of it in a few months. The 1918 epidemic was the worst in history and could even rank with the Black Death or the bubonic plague as a killer. Authorities estimate that over 20 million people died of it in a few months worldwide, and more than 50 times that number were sick with it. My mother was the only pregnant woman known to have survived the influenza for miles around the area of their residence. My mother, Lillian Mae Hilburn, age 15, and my father, Joe Lawrence Norton, eloped in December 1917. Mother was the eldest of 9 children born to George Taylor and Maggie Elizabeth Frady Hilbert. At that time, people were permitted to sign that the intended bride was of age. My father was accompanied by his father to purchase the marriage license, and his father signed a sworn statement that my mother was of legal age. When all the facts were revealed that this young couple had gone to the minister's home at Union Grove Methodist Church and married, my maternal grandparents were devastated. Finding out that their new son-in-law's father had lied about their daughter's age gave the two families a bad start. During the courtship of this young couple, my father had promised my mother a new life in Center, Alabama. He said one of his uncles was a mechanic and had offered him a job and also to teach him the trade. Mother was thrilled at the prospect of living where there would be electricity and running water in their home. She had always had to work hard, beginning at age 3, washing dishes while standing in a chair, later working in the fields. When she started to school, it was a 6-mile walk to and from school. In the winter, her feet would get so cold, she would break ice and put her feet in the water to get them somewhat warmer. At the various one-room schools she attended, there was a pot-bellied stove, and her shoes never dried completely before it was time to start the long walk back home. My father painted a picture for them in Center that seemed wonderful to her. After they were married, however, she found that he had a different plan. To live with his parents, Joe and Catherine Norton, he would continue to farm with his father. Mr. and Ms. Norton had several sons and no daughters. Mother soon discovered that she was expected to be a servant in their home. She was expected to do endless housework and to also work in the fields. After the noon meal each day, the men would go to the porch and lie down and rest. Mother had to stay in the kitchen until every dish and pot and pan was washed and put away. The floor swept and any other job that her mother-in-law wanted done. By that time, the men were ready to return to the field, and she had to go back without any rest. Even 3 months later, when she became pregnant, she had to continue all this work. This situation was very unhappy for Mother. After much appealing to my father, he finally agreed to move into a house of their own. This move took place a short time before I was born. During the time my parents lived in their own home, his parents were always working on him to get them back in their home. He became surly and frequently made remarks that had threatening implications. After I was born, this situation became worse. And when he said that he was taking great-grandmother Hill from home and come back and take matters under control, mother and great-grandmother both became frightened. The next morning, when he left to go to his parents, mother and great-grandmother quickly conferred, and both felt that they should leave, although there was a great risk involved for mother. Mother had only been able to sit up some for a couple of days after the influenza when I was born. There was snow and ice on the ground, and it was several miles away at Spring Garden where mother's parents lived. Great-grandmother carried me, and the frightened little party finally arrived at their destination. When they walked in and my maternal grandparents saw mother, they immediately gave way to grief. Grandfather fell on the bed and cried, "Oh, Maggie, this will surely kill her." A frail child who had not reached her 17th birthday, the mother of a 5-day-old infant, had faced her life's problems with the courage that she displayed throughout her lifetime. Mother brought nothing except the clothes on her back and my meager belongings. I was only allowed 8 diapers, 3 dresses, and 3 gowns by the decree of my father's mother. She called all the commands to my father, and he obeyed implicitly. Never was my mother allowed to make decisions concerning her own life. My maternal grandparents were still young, and they had both come from large families. When word got around about the situation with mother, all her many uncles rallied around her. I don't recall how long it took my father to get grandfather and mother's permission to come talk to mother. Eventually, they came to an agreement which included a separate home of their own. They moved into a little house just behind the store at Pleasant Gap, Alabama. This arrangement lasted about 2 months because my father's parents never let up about what they wanted. He was their eldest son, and they wanted him and his wife to follow their instructions, which greatly benefited them. Mother told me that he did not make threatening remarks anymore after seeing the display of support she received from her family. He was determined to follow his parents' wishes, however. She also learned that their part of the profit from the year's crop was $700, which his parents had very promptly borrowed from him. Here they were, with nothing to show for a year's work. This situation came to a climax one windy day in March 1919. The man that had pledged his love until death, and to forsake all others and cleave unto her, loaded all their worldly possessions in his wagon threw her few clothes in the floor, and drove off to his cabin.